What is it?
It's your future. It's called a Stargate.
Chevron 7 lock.
Welcome to Walking Through the Stargate. I'm Brent.
And I'm Zach.
This is episode 201. 201!
201!
Aw, man. So are we going to get to 300? Is that a thing? Do you know?
Yes.
Oh, we still, okay.
We'll get to 300 of our, because there were 10 seasons of, there are 10 seasons of SG-1.
Mm-hmm.
There were 5 seasons of Atlantis. I think each season of Atlantis had 20 episodes in it.
Sure. So that's,
100
there.
Right there.
Or 100 right there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there were 2 seasons of Universe, which had, I'm pretty sure, 20 each.
So there's another 40.
So that's another 40.
So we're going to at least get to 300.
We'll get to, with the movies like and such, we'll get about to, like 350-ish.
Fine. Well, on to the next 100.
Absolutely.
This is the start of that. So we're going to be talking about Stargate SG-1's episode, The Fourth Horseman, Part 1. Friends, one number one. Good to be back. Good to be back behind the mics. Looking for, it's good. We got another relatively long break coming up just because of schedules, life, etc. So, you know, I think the next one that we're going to do is another 3 weeks, which is a bummer, but it's just the way it is. Sorry for that, but it is what it is. But we're here today. We're here now. That's good.
I am excited to be here, Brent.
That's right. And friends, if you are also excited that we're here right now, you can help us just be awesomely what we do with Independence Day. At, I don't know. Hi, we're an independent podcast. If you'd like to support what we've got going on,
wow,
you can support the show over at buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough. Or you can go to our website at wtts.space. Yay! I like that. And click on the little coffee cup icon on the bottom right corner. There,
Ooh. You
can easily buy us 1 or 2 or 5 or so coffees just right there if you want to. And that's fantastic. Thanks to those who have done so. I haven't checked in a little bit. If you've done it recently, I haven't checked. I'm sorry. I'll check again. And then we'll give you thanks. But anyway, you could do that. Or there's a little buttony-do little like pill button on the very bottom of that widget that is like says Walking Through the Stargate or something. If you click on that, it takes you to our Buy Me a Coffee page at buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough. And there, if you wish, you can sign up for what they call memberships. That's the monthly thing. If you like what we got going on so much that you want to contribute monthly, that's exactly where you go and do it. We've only got the one tier. It's the general fund. It helps offset the cost of what we do. If you joined in and spent a whole year, you're basically paying like close to a tenth of what we have to, you know, pay out to keep the thing going. So thank you very much to those who have signed up for membership. That's fantastic. And also there are wish lists. That's what it is. Wish list items. And there's a, you know, couple of technology ones like some better mics and a better mixer for the ease of creating the content. But in there as well is the wish list item of watching and recording 2 more episodes of our reactions to the non-canonical animated series Stargate Infinity.
Yes.
And we are about, I think, 8 episodes in, and we have liked a couple things and really hated a lot else. And so if you want to hear our genuine reactions to that thing, you can support that membership or that wish list item. And once it funds, we will watch the next 2 episodes and record our reactions to it. But until then, I will continue to revel in the fact that I don't have to spend time watching that series, which is fantastic for me. If you have anybody in your life that needs excellent Stargate podcast content like this, you can recommend our podcast to them and they can find it in a lot of places. They can go to Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts while it's still there, and Spotify Podcasts and Amazon Podcasts and iHeartRadio Podcasts, right? I think that's it. And what they should do is that they should take advantage that podcasting is a federated technology, and they should go get their podcast alligators and type in Walking Through the Stargate. They will find it. They can subscribe, and voila, every time that we publish an episode, it will go straight into their ear holes as soon as they listen to it. That's where they can find us.
That's right.
Zach.
So, Brent, I have a quick question here.
Yes, go ahead.
Google Podcasts is going away. Is Google doing anything to like replace Google Podcasts?
I have no idea. It's Google.
That's true.
They operate in their own world. I suspect, I can't remember if I've heard confirmation or rumor, but like YouTube podcasts either will be or is a thing, whatever. You know, I mean, they're not going to get out of that. It's not like they're going to, well, I don't know. They got out of the wave thing, like just they got completely out of that 12 years ago, 14 years ago.
Well, that's because their technology didn't work very well.
It was a little rough. But you can't stop the signal. Can't stop the signal now. yeah, whatever. I'm not sure what they're going to do. We will. It's fine. It's fine. You know, the reason it's fine is that they are one of a lot of competing options out there, including the best one, which is just the federated technology of the podcast alligator. And, you know, if they get out of podcasts, that's bummer for them, but not bummer for me because.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Okay. There you go. All right. But Zach.
Yes,
if a person wants to reach out and let us know that they know precisely what's going to be happening with the googly podcasty thing and where they're going to go and how it's going to go down and what's the timeline and how we will be affected, that would be great information to know. How might they reach out and let us know that?
Well, if you have information about the great and powerful corporations of the world.
Great googly moogly.
Great googly moogly. Yeah, and you want to tell us about it, you can do that by emailing us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com.
Yes.
You can also go to the Facebooks and type in Walking Through the Stargate and go to the page or the group. Mm-hmm. Probably the group is the better place to type in things. And then you can share all sorts of fun, dandy things about the great googly mooglies.
Yes.
you can also go to a website, which is WTTS.space.
Space.
Ooh, there you go. And then you click on the button that's the Discord button. Click.
Click.
And that'll take you to the Discords.
Yes.
Unless you're already on the Discords, in which case you open up the Discord app on your phone or other device.
Yes.
And then you can share there. Click, 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 click. And then you can say, great googly moogly.
Yeah.
And then talk about what's happening in the world of international corporations.
Yeah.
That at one point in time we're like, gosh, I hope they don't turn evil. And then we go, darn.
Yep. Oh, shoot. Oh, good times. Not good times, but you know what I'm saying.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I mean, the reality is that corporations are not... they don't care about...
They're not people.
People. You know, I mean, that's not to say that they can't, but that's not part of their DNA. Certainly not in a capitalistic system like we have.
No.
Maybe not in any system. That, you know, doesn't really matter.
They serve their purpose. They are useful tools. We should treat them as such.
Yes. But
and you don't take your useful tools and throw them in the rain and treat them poorly, but you don't give them the rights of people either. So, Hammer, what do you think about this? It's tough to tell what you're saying. I guess we should continue to go in the path that we're going.
No. The hammer says, is it a nail? Of course it's a nail. Everything's a nail.
Everything's a nail. Let me hit it. Yeah. Boy, that didn't seem to fix my TV, Hammer. I'm not sure. I don't think that was the right choice.
Well,
it says keep going. Okay, I guess we're going.
But the hammer sees it as a nail, and so then, you know, just keep swinging. You know, what if...
Are you not entertained?
the theory of the multiverse is that, like, for every action, it like every possible thing could happen.
Including somewhere. Fixing the TV.
So... In some universe, the hammer hits the TV enough times that the TV is actually fixed.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Anyway.
Wow. Okay. So in any case, Brent.
Yeah.
Shall we dig into this episode?
Yeah,
because there's a lot of pieces in this that'll probably bring this conversation back around to where we just were.
Corporations? Okay,
well,
let's go.
Corporations, well, systems bigger than us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. All right. All right. All right. Here we go. So, The Fourth Horseman, part one. The director is Andy Makita.
Yeah.
This is his third of four directing credits this season.
Mm-hmm.
He did Avalon parts one and two, mm-hmm. and then this one, and he's got mm-hmm. one more.
Okay.
The teleplay for this episode is by Damian Kindler.
Really? Okay.
This is his second of three writing credits. He did not, for what it's worth, do the teleplay for the second part of this episode that we'll review next time.
Okay.
And during the commentary, there's a lot of collaboration that happened in these two parts, and then things coming and going from them.
Sure, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So that's not to say that I mean, this is definitely a Kindler script, but it also has influences from, I think it was Joe Malazzi and Paul Mulley, who did the second one. And makes so they had a lot of, and then Rob Cooper, of course, has a lot of say in this whole process as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, all right. We've got several guest actors.
Mm-hmm.
We get to say hello to Don S. Davis again.
Yay!
Yay! This isn't the first time he's been back on SG-1, is it?
No.
I can't remember.
I don't think, though, I don't think he's been on set, though, right? Wasn't he, like, on a TV or
let me think here. I don't remember.
Nah.
So I think he showed up
early on.
He showed up in season 8 some point in time, I think.
Oh,
he
maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe that's it. It's that he was around. Know. Yeah. That's right.
Anyway, we got Don S. Davis.
Yep.
Hello, we have Tony Amendola.
Yay! Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. We've got Gary Jones.
Yay!
Chief Master Sergeant Walter Rader Hammerin.
Another friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Yep.
We've got Bill Dow as Dr. Bill Lee. We got Lexa Doig as Dr. Carolyn Lamb.
Yep.
We got Louis Gossett Jr. as Garrick.
Yep.
We've got Greg Anderson as Ori Pryor number one.
Yep.
We've got Gardner Miller as Yet Year.
Who's Yet Year? Is that Garrick's buddy?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
That's the Jaffa who's Garrick's buddy.
Yeah. Got it.
And Yet Year is like a play on that there. This is not the first time we've seen Yet Year. He was in a few episodes ago.
Okay.
We also have Simone Bailey. And I also noticed as I was watching this that we have Jeff Judge returning for just a brief moment. He was one of the Jaffa who spoke when they were on Chulak.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
And I didn't notice. I may have missed it, but I didn't notice it in the list of guest actors on IMDb. But
yeah.
I still saw him. So anyway. We have Cameron Bright, who plays Orlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a mini IMDb biography by Anne Bright.
Okay.
Possibly a parent. I don't know.
Probably a parent.
Anyway, Cameron was born in Victoria, British Columbia on January 26, 1993. He resides in Vancouver, British Columbia. At the age of 6, he was filming his first commercial. In 2012, at only 9 years of age, he worked in his first... 2002. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
In 2002, at only 9 years of age, he worked in his first lead role in the movie Godsend, alongside Academy Award winner Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
1 month after completing Godsend, Cameron was filming his next lead in Birth, playing the reincarnated husband of Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman.
Huh.
The role of...
Slight repeat of role. Okay, carry on.
Well, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
The role of Sean in Birth would land Cameron his first nomination for a major award.
Hmm.
Since landing his first lead at the age of 9, he has carried 13 lead roles in major movies and appeared in numerous TV series as a guest star. He has been a guest presenter at the Breakthrough of the Year, BC Leo and Gemini Awards, as well as being nominated for 8 major awards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure this is not new.
Probably not.
But anyway, there you go.
Yeah.
He's got stuff, if I recall correctly, going through like 2018 on IMDb. So.
Yeah. Okay. That would make sense.
Anyway, his first IMDb credit came in 2000 when he played young Peter in the episode Innocence of the TV series Higher Ground.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't know anything about any of that.
Do I? Nope.
All right. We also say hello to Panu, who plays Lieutenant Fisher.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Here is a mini biography by Billy Parrott.
Okay.
Or maybe it's Billy Perrault.
It could be Perrault, but it's probably Parrott.
I'm going to go with Parrott.
Because it would be William Perrault, but Billy Parrott.
Why would it have to be William?
Because it's fancy.
Oh, well, it's fancy. Leading man and versatile character actor Panu, his unique one-word birth name translates to God Among Us. I'm not going to keep doing that.
Okay, all right.
In his native Creole, has led a remarkable life. He began his professional acting career with a role in the feature film Paper Trail in 1998, and he hasn't looked back since. He has had a number of important roles in such films as Steal This Movie in 2000, the independent feature Fizzy Business in 2002, which was written, directed, produced by Carl Goldstein, and The Invisible in 2007. He has also had memorable roles in many television shows, including Fox Family Channel's I Was a Sixth Grade Alien back in 99, Sci-Fi Channel's Stargate SG-1, and Progetto Atlantide, which started in 84, and Showtime's Stanley Tookie Williams' A Question of Justice. He will actually show up in a couple of episodes of Atlantis as a different character. So we'll see his face again.
Okay, great.
His first IMDb credit came way back in 1995 when he played the postal clerk in the TV movie Degree of Guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know any of that.
No, neither do I.
And then finally, we say hello to Ty Olson, who plays Colonel Barnes.
Yeah.
He was born in 1974 in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
He's known for X2, the X-Men movie, War for the Planet of the Apes, and Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Very good.
He attended the Canterbury High School in Ottawa Arts School, specializing in drama, dance, and music. And we actually have seen him before. He was in the season 3 episode of Point of View. He played Jaffa number 1.
Okay.
Yep. His first IMDb credit came in 1988 when he did the voice of Astonage Meadows in Mobile Suit Gundam Char's Counterattack.
Counterattack. Okay.
So, those are our actors.
Yes.
The original air date for The Fourth Horseman Part 1 was September 16, 2005. Which is the same as for Prototype. So they aired on the same day.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. All right. So they aired Prototype and then this, like, bang, bang, right? Just back to back day.
Presumably. I don't recall.
I mean, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, in 2005 in September, I was like, you know, eyebrow deep in my first semester of seminary classes. And, you know, I wasn't watching these things on TV. I was watching them on the internet.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
On my computer.
Shortly thereafter. The internet.
Yes.
Yep.
Anyway, so if you want to know all the number ones and blahs for this episode, go re-listen to Prototype.
Yeah.
And you'll get all of that fun information.
You sure will.
I do have some trivia for this episode, though.
Okay.
So, we had Don S. Davis playing General Hammond in that speech. The original plan was to have General John Jumper, the chief of staff for the United States Air Force, to do that. And this would have been the second time that he would have appeared on the show.
Sure.
But he was a very busy man, and he was on, he was off, he was on, he was off. And finally, he wasn't going to be able to do it, and they were able to get Don S. Davis to come in and do that episode. And that was relatively short notice. for him ultimately, which is why he is wearing a suit and not a uniform.
Aha!
You would have expected him to be wearing.
Oh yeah.
You know,
his dress uniform.
Dress uniform.
Yep.
It was sufficiently short notice that they weren't able to get that for him.
All right, Don, we just need you to stand here and read that teleprompter. Great, exactly. Thanks. Let's get you back to the airport, but in a dramatic way so we can film that too. Thanks so much.
Exactly. The producers had also hoped that they could bring back Sean Patrick Flannery as Orlin, but he was not available, and so they rewrote the story and then recast the character as John Orlin.
A choice which almost worked.
Well, you know, so part of what was going on, like in this episode, they needed to have an ancient.
Yeah.
Come back and give them some information.
Oh, no. We'll get into it when we get into it. It's fine.
Well, I just want to let me finish my story here. Right. And they're trying to figure out who to do. Well, they couldn't do Oma because she's busy fighting Anubis. Mm-hmm. And you can't have Daniel do that. They've had him go back and forth too many times as it is. And so that left Orlin. And, you know, since Orlin was able to make Stargate out of a toaster, maybe he could make a cure for a plague out of, you know, Band-Aids.
Sure.
Anyway, okay. So, Dr. Lee is listening to Dark Pariah, right?
Yes.
So this episode or this music was actually Infinity by Robert J. Walsh, Dennis Winslow, and Ron L. Chick from their album Deutsch Rock and Metal Angst.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and incidentally, you know, like when they had the camera pan and they had the speaker vibrating like that.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say they weren't actually pumping loud music through there.
No.
But they did have the sound guy had done stuff with these things and was able to very easily rig some wires in there to pull on it to make that cone look like it was bouncing around.
Oh,
like
good.
That.
Good.
That's probably a good thing.
Yes.
This episode is entitled The Fourth Horseman, which, of course, is a reference to the Book of Revelation. From the Bible, it's the last book of the Bible. In there are four horsemen. I'm going to blank on what they all are. The fourth one is death and brings a plague. And, you know, so...
There you go.
There you go. That's it. That's as far as the imagery goes.
Yep. I mean,
there's nothing fancy. There's nothing, nope. You know, cute and cuddly about that. It's just...
No seventh seal, no Ingmar Bergman, nothing.
No,
nope. Plague and death.
Just plague and death. Although in the commentary, Andy Makita and Damian Kindler was suggesting that the part two episode should be called The Fifth Horseman.
Who brings cake?
Who brings cake? I don't remember what it was. They did actually suggest something like that, but I don't think it was actually cake. I didn't listen that closely.
Well, they should have. It should have been.
Well, you know.
Although, when did Eddie Izzard make that? It was right around now-ish. I'll look that up. I'll look up when Eddie Izzard did that bit.
I mean, maybe they did say cake. I can't remember. You know, it was yesterday when I listened to this. Anyway, the restaurant where Lieutenant Fisher infected the manager... is the Elements Cafe, which is located across the street from Bridge Studios, where SG-1 Atlantis was filmed. And it was also used in the episode Chimera for a scene with Carter and Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we did say hello to Don S. Davis in this episode, and this is his 150th episode.
Hey, very nice. Congratulations, Don S. Davis.
Yeah.
Cake or death, at least the recorded version that I'm familiar with on Eddie Izzard's Dress to Kill. That DVD came out in 2002, so it was possible that they could have made the Fifth Horseman bring cake.
That could have been. Possibly. I would have to listen again to the commentary to find out what they said. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
That's okay. Because the fifth horseman who brings cake is all out of cake.
Oh, bummer. So yeah. What's left?
Death.
Death.
Oh, we're all out of cake.
Hmm. Oh, well, is there a third option?
No, no, no. It's just cake or death.
And you have
cake or death.
Oh, and you're all out of cake.
Cake, please. Yeah, well, it's good. Then. It's great. It's such a good. That's such a good. It's so good. If you have not watched Eddie Izzard's Dress to Kill, watch it. It's fantastic.
I have seen it, but it has been a number of years ago.
It's so good. Anyway,
all right. So this title, The Fourth Horseman, in various other languages.
Uh-huh.
The Hungarians call it The Fourth Horseman. Mm-hmm. The Czech call it The Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. The Spanish, The Fourth Horseman. The French, The Fourth Horseman.
Mm-hmm.
The Portuguese, The Fourth Horseman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Italians, Lethal Virus, Part 1.
Okay. Little on the nose, but okay.
Yep. Now, and the Germans. The Germans have a TV title and a DVD title.
Right? Okay, okay.
So their DVD title is Horseman of the Apocalypse.
Okay.
Okay. The TV title was The Return of Orlin.
Oh, gosh. Germany!
I don't know which one's more on the nose.
Yeah.
Return of Orlin or Lethal Virus.
Yeah, right? It could only be better if they said The Return of Orlin, who tries to solve the lethal virus. Like,
yes. That would have been better.
Oh, funny. Oh, that's awesome.
All right. I think it's time now, Brent, for the synopsis for The Fourth Horseman. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Previously on Stargate SG-1.
Uh-huh.
The Priors attack several Jaffa worlds, including Kalana and Sartorus.
Mm-hmm.
General Landry urges Garak to continue to work together. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Carter gets visited by a creepy ascended being who loves her after having just met her.
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention that he was creepy? Yeah, he was creepy. Did I mention that it's going to get even more creepy?
Oh, boy.
No, I haven't, but it will. And now, Mitchell and Jackson are walking through the halls of the SGC, presumably after having just played some basketball.
No, they just threw the ball at each other, like, a lot.
Oh, okay. Either way. They're talking about all the stuff that's been happening in the galaxy. Suddenly, they get a whiff of something truly horrendous. No, it's not either of them. It's Colonel Barnes and Lieutenant Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
They have just come back from a long-term undercover mission to P2X-885, and they haven't bathed in a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
The news, not to mention the smell, from 885 isn't good. 885 has gone awry.
Mm-hmm.
In the briefing room, Carter proposes creating a machine that will emit a field of energy that will cancel out the powers of the Prior. She believes that with the information gleaned from the whole Kalik debacle, they may be able to get this job done. Now, Landry doesn't seem to be near as impressed or excited about this as Carter would have thought, and Mitchell tells her that she just needs a better PR person, because calling it an anti-Prior gun would have been way cooler. So, Carter and Dr. Lee begin working on the machine. Dr. Lee thinks it may be easier to make cold fusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, on Dakara, Garak is visited by a Prior. Garak has read the Book of Origin and is convinced by it. The Ori are the gods the Jaffa have been searching for.
Mm-hmm.
So he can no longer sing the U2 song.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, move. Anyway, he sets out to codify Origin as the official religion of the Jaffa. Garak presents his beliefs to the Jaffa High Council. Some are convinced, others are not. Braytek and Teal'c speak out against this with passion.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for our heroes, the council passes Garak's proposal. Teal'c and Braytek discuss how they can oppose this development. It may result in an all-out civil war among the Jaffa. Colonel Barnes gets sick. Dr. Lamb recognizes the symptoms. It's the Prior plague. Worse, even, it's beginning to spread. They have to find Lieutenant Fisher. For his part, he's not at the SGC right now. He's at a hangar, listening to a speech by Lieutenant General George S. Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
Members of the SGC interrupt the speech in hazmat suits and take Lieutenant Fisher away. Lieutenant Fisher is patient zero of this plague. He's a carrier, but he's not sick. While on this undercover mission to P2X885, the prior was moving around the community during prostration, blessing the people. Mm-hmm. And the prior touched Fisher's head in a blessing and presumably passed on the plague then.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
Yep.
The SGC goes into high gear trying to contain this plague. Unfortunately, the virus appears to be both airborne and persistent. And despite their best efforts of trying to keep it localized, the plague begins to spread across the entire country,
mm-hmm.
such that mm-hmm. President Hayes declares a lockdown and puts the entire nation under quarantine.
Yeah.
I'm unconvinced that this will work, but that's just me.
Uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
I mean, not that we have any actual real life experience no. in recent memory of this no. happening. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
It'll totally work.
It'll be fine. All right. So while Carter is working on the anti-prior device and struggling, a young boy suddenly appears. It's Orlin, an ascended being who fell in love with Sam several years ago.
Yeah.
Made a Stargate out of spare toaster parts.
Yeah.
And has now returned to share some startling revelations about the Ori and their true intentions. The Ori gain power when lower life forms worship them. And despite the promise to ascend their followers, they most certainly don't actually do that, for that would mean they would have to share this power, mm-hmm. and nobody wants to share power.
No.
At least not the Ori. Orlin has returned to give warning and to help Sam and the SGC stop the Ori from gaining a foothold and control of the Milky Way. He implies that if the Ori do get hold of the Milky Way, it might actually be a bad thing for the ancients, but he doesn't go into more detail than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Orlin assists with the anti-prior device and also with developing a cure for this prior plague. Orlin returned as an adolescent so that he could retain more of his knowledge as an ascended being. Unfortunately, his willful attempt to hold on to these memories is causing brain damage, and he is beginning to forget things. So Carter encourages him to take some time to rest, and at lunch, he reveals that not only is the food bad, but that he still loves her, and is sad that because of human conventions, he can't pursue her as he'd like, but maybe in a few years, it'll be a... Carter cuts that line of thought off right away. Yeah. So, Orlin's work reveals that in order to make a cure, they need a blood sample from the prior that infected Lieutenant Fisher. Fortunately, their anti-prior device is ready for a test drive. Unfortunately, no one knows for sure if it'll work.
Yep.
Mitchell and Jackson lead a team to capture the prior. They have intel that the particular prior will be returning to the Sodan homeworld soon, and that would be their best bet to capture him.
Mm-hmm.
So they go off and they do that. Back to the Jaffa plot line. The Ori prior talking to Garrick tells him that he must wipe out the rebel unbelieving Jaffa. So Garrick goes to Chulak, where Teal'c and Braytek and others have gathered, but ultimately refuses to take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
The prior is really angry with Garrick, and Garrick begs forgiveness.
Ask not forgiveness from me. Ask it from the guy who you need to ask it from. Blah, 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 blah.
Ask it from my boss.
Yeah. So the prior then uses his power to take Garrick's mind to Celestis to visit the Docei. The Docei is in this episode, and he is actually given credit, Julian Sands, for this episode, but everything he did is just a recut, you know,
yeah.
stuff from the first time we saw him several episodes ago.
Yes.
Anyway, the Docei turns Garrick into a prior. Garrick returns to Dakara with more power than ever before.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. To be continued.
Oh, to be continued.
To be continued. So, Brent.
Yeah.
The Fourth Horseman, part
uh-huh.
one.
Uh-huh.
What'd you think?
Well, I'll get through the bad stuff first. Let's just get the creepy kid thing out of the way right away. I feel bad for Amanda Tapping. She, unfortunately, is the unenviable actor who has to deal with all of the cringe, all of it. Like, Okay, we got a cringy thing, and we need Amanda. You need to react to it. Okay. Yeah, you've got this. Yeah, she does. But ugh, can we have like something creepy happen to somebody else for a change, please?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that the decision to have Orlin bring it up in that manner was that could have been avoided in the writing. It could have been avoided. You could have easily had him be a teenager and be a little awkward and not bring it up, but kind of like allude to it, but be embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like that'd been funny where if you know, he can't actually do anything that suggests that Samantha Carter should fall in love with him. He could just be like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. That would have been believable and funny, but you know, you could also just kind of not bring it up. You could also, introduce a new ancient. That's okay. We don't have to have Orlin. It's okay. We have had 2.5, the half being Anubis,
okay,
ancients intersect with our mortal coil. There's, in the back of my mind, isn't there a third one? What was, yeah, what about the prisoner lady who's on prisoner on that planet? Remember the planet with the energy weapon? That's not an energy weapon. It's actually her.
That was in Atlantis.
Oh, whoops. Okay. maybe you have somebody else that's like that. It doesn't have to be Orlin, but it is. And they did that and they decided to run with that and they thought it was a good idea. Kind of like they thought it was a good idea to have what's his face talk about the sponge bath. And even though the characters react to it appropriately, like, ew, no, don't do that.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to have that in there. It brings absolutely nothing to the story and unfortunately just makes that guy just look bad. And so when bad things are happening to, not bad things, but, you know, when consequences are happening, well, not even consequences. Yeah. Consequences in the fashion of like A happens and then B happens. Like, you know, he got touched on the head and then now he's a carrier for a thing. He didn't do anything. It just happened. But you know, my sympathy for the character is not very high. Like, it's like, I mean, I don't know. Sure, it's a bummer, but ew.
The best that does is show that Mitchell and Jackson, and frankly, Barnes, for that matter, are, you know, at least people who are trying not to be toxic masculinity.
Yeah, I mean, at least it shows that they have the semblance of character, of good character.
Right. We already know that about Mitchell and we already know that about Jackson.
Yeah. And so
the only new information we get is that Fisher is ick.
Yeah.
Doesn't know when, I mean, think the thought. I mean, you know, you can't always stop those thoughts from getting into your head.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, but you got to know when to shut your mouth.
Sure do. And at best, we could possibly chalk this up to locker room talk, which absolutely happens, especially within like situations where there's just a bunch of men standing around. That's true. But we don't. This is a fantasy show for, I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? It's this is fake.
Yeah.
This is not real life. You don't have to. It's fine. Just don't even bring it up. Just move on.
Ugh. I mean, I will say that for that scene, that all of the actors who did that scene, I was impressed with how they handled it.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, Panu, who had to be gross.
Yeah.
You know, did it well.
Yeah.
You know, he did gross well.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that regard, you know, good on them, but yeah, the whole scene didn't actually have to be there.
I feel about that. Like I feel, that, definitely how some people, and me to a certain extent, feel about gratuitous violence. Like, it's really not doing much for the story. And anybody who's really trying to defend it for the sake of the story, it's like, you're not a very creative person. I can come up with 6 different ways that we could do, like, we could convey important information, you know. And if what we're trying to establish is the grossness of a character who later on is in peril, like, okay, that's a weird choice. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm the storyteller and that's what I need to do, then okay. But then where's the payoff for that? Like, you know, I didn't see it. So whatever. Anyway, but okay. Let's see. Other bad things. I will put this next thing in the category of bad, and then I'm going to take it right out and put it in the category of good. You ready for this?
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
Of course, it takes an ancient to get us out of our pickle with the Ori. Of course. Of course, it takes yet another quasi-divine intervention for us to be able to get out of the what are we going to do about this problem and actually get us into the foot of maybe there's something we can do about this problem. And when I'm saying the problem, I'm not talking about the problem of the episode. I'm talking about the problem of the arc. Right.
Right.
This guy is coming in and giving us information that actually makes sense. It actually clicks. So I'm taking it out of the bad basket and I'm putting it into the good basket. This works. So last time that we were talking about the Ori, I decided that I was going to write the storyline off. I was like, okay, no, this show can't handle it. We've spent 4 or 5 episodes in this avenue where the best we have is Ori are bad because they kill. So they are bad and therefore they can't be gods. And I keep coming at it like, I mean, okay, but and while it certainly makes sense that some people be like, look, a bad god is not a god worthy of worship. I understand that line of thought. And then I say, and it also makes sense that bad gods could exist and that they demand worship. Like, that's a possibility. And so as a result, I just kept looking at the storyline going, this isn't very convincing, guys. You aren't doing a good job convincing me of what we should do about it other than. My heroes are in trouble. Like, that's okay. Finally, we've got some meat on the bones of this thing. We've got some meat that this is basically a culture difference from eons ago that is now manifesting itself in a group of individuals, the Ori specifically, who are abusing their power, which we assumed, but it hadn't been kind of shown, which are abusing their power to take advantage of people in order to stay in power and consume their little life force belief thing, whatever, so that they could, boom, there we go. We got it. Why couldn't I have that in the second or third episode about this thing? That's good. That's great. That's a great explanation, right? And that explanation does not have to be believed. You could still have the same tensions that you had from those previous episodes, right? Mitchell brought it up. Like, they might not believe us, right? Like, we've got some good information on this thing. You know, Daniel's excited about it. I'm excited about it, too. People might not believe it. It doesn't give you the slam dunk. Before, you had nothing. Before, you literally had, I don't know, he's just kind of weird and he kills a lot of people if you don't believe. That's bad, right? That was pretty weak sauce. Now you've got it a little bit more. You still have to prove or provide a lot of evidence. You're not out of the woods, but hey, this is making sense. This is good.
It, you know, there seems to be a universal belief that you should be honest with what you're doing. And
seems to be that there is a universal belief in that. Yes, because it's a Western storyteller. It's steeped inside Western ideology.
Well, you know, but there is even beyond Western stuff, which is certainly is there. The idea of honor and integrity, you know, is that's part of most stories from across all genres that I have come across.
Yeah, there is absolutely the avenue of thought, which we've touched on a number of times, which is that, yeah, I mean, that resonates with us, that's for sure. But this is science fiction. It's totally possible there's a society out there that's like, psh, what? Honesty and honor? That's a great way to die early. No, power and duplicity. Those are the things that you want to strive for. And
well, here's the thing. It's like, unless you are, if you are in power, power and duplicity are good tools because you can abuse and manipulate those who are under you.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a universal concept, a universal truth. Like, if you have a lot of power, the easiest way to keep that power, frankly, is through duplicity and abuse.
Because that's our experience.
That's been our experience. That's been human experience throughout the ages, across cultural and linguistic divides.
Yeah,
and other divides, I'm sure.
That absolute power corrupts absolutely. You're right, and that every every being with that much power is prone to abuse, which is a part of the storyline they were talking about, why the ancients don't enter. Like, that was also a good piece of information. Yep.
Now, right? And you know, this brings us back to what we were talking about with Google at the beginning, right? 20 years ago, when we met, we were talking about, gosh, I hope Google and Apple never turn evil, because right. if they do, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
And now I'm like,
I'm screwed.
I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there is something about having power and such.
Yeah.
And this episode certainly opens that up and codifies that. It was kind of an assumption before, but now we have, you know, from our position as a watcher of these episodes, yes. we have proof.
Yeah, and
you know, within the story, they have more or less proof depending on who you are.
Bingo. Yes, within the construct of the story, absolutely, right? Like, it's not our we are not, this is not a treatise, this is not a philosophical discussion. The show is not a philosophical discussion. It's entertainment and it's a story. So therefore, within the construct of the story, this, you know, we should take it as written. Like, this is what it is. The Ori do this and this is why. The ancients do that and that is why. You know, I have a couple of quibbles about how this particular story chose to introduce that information through the character of Orlin and blah, blah, blah. You know, yeah, okay, fine. But that information is fantastic. And that we are able to construct something with our sciencey brains to counteract it is exactly in the wheelhouse of the show. That's precisely where we knew the solution would be coming from. I was just kind of waiting, what angle is it going to take? Because it just seemed completely unassailable. And here we've got it. Here we've got the chink in the armor that we can see if we can kind of get something in there and open it up a little bit to really make some headway in defeating the latest threat to our existence. I'm quite pleased. And this really resuscitated the Ori and Origin storyline for me, like big time. This breathed enough new information into that story that I'm back to, wow, I really like this storyline. I'm really jamming on this thing. This is good. This is great stuff. I'm really excited to see where we go with this. And of course, I'm expecting setbacks and failures. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be perfect, but boy, I'm excited to see my heroes be heroic in the face of astonishingly insurmountable odds. It's going to be awesome. And shifting gears, unfortunately, I have to say it like that. Shifting gears over to the Jaffa, I am generally positive about how they are integrating the origin aspect within the Jaffa story. Okay. It still feels like it's running so parallel to the main story that, like, you know, Teal'c and Braytac and all my buddies, like, they're running. It's a second show. It's a show within a show, right? Ooh. It's 10 minutes or thereabouts, you know, in the episode talking about what they've got going on. Technically, I am disappointed that there seems to be civil war brewing. The reason why I am technically disappointed is because it's bringing Christopher Judge's Teal'c and Tony Amendola's Braytac back into the position of rebel. And it works. This is why I keep. That's why it's technically disappointed. Actually, I mean, hey, they know the roles. They do it well. They can be written well in that position. They're the defiance aspect can be well encapsulated in these characters. I think that it's a great story. I mean, even still, it works. It works really well. I am disappointed that they are back there. At least it seems like they're back there because that's typecasting. Different word, not typecasting, because it's not really typecasting. I'm not thinking about the actors. I'm just thinking about the characters. It's putting them back into a situation where we know they can make hay And so, well, let's just have them be rebels again. How do we get them to be rebels? Civil War. And, you know, the people in power are the people that we are opposing. And it's just another version of a Gould.
Yeah. I mean, that said, it is not unusual for groups that have come together to fight a singular bad guy, to defeat said bad guy, and then return to previous squabbles.
Oh, for lack of a better term.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, we've had differing views on how to be a people. The Jaffa have from the very beginning of this storyline. So
and you know how much I like political intrigue stories. I really do. Stargate SG-1 is not a political intrigue series, right? There are shows out there that do that and they do it really well. This isn't that. I realize that the writers were kind of in a pickle because at the end of season 8, you had to have everybody win. And so everybody did win, right? Mm-hmm. And you had your casualties in the winning, and I still think that they handled the Jaffa victories and Takara just stupidly, but they happened and they were now free. And there you go. The end. And maybe we'll have some adventures with them in a movie. Okay. Oh, great. We got a 9th season. Oh, what do we do? And, you know, it's very sensible that the showrunners say, what do we do? Okay, well, they've got a culture and a society and they're trying to bring it together. And they have been warring against this common enemy this whole time, which is very different than coming together and building something. So there's going to be friction, you know, Fine. Makes sense. Except that now, at this point, halfway through the season, the payout is pretty weak. The interest that you earned on that story is kind of weak sauce. We've got, we got a leader that our hero disagrees with. So they're, you know, so by proxy, we disagree with them too, and for good reason, but I'm just saying we don't like them. And, we've got tension within the council. Okay. But it's now more. Okay. And we've got the beginnings of a civil war that are about to break out. Okay. Putting us back into the position of being a rebel. Okay. Another story way that you could get Christopher Judge back into the SGC situation is to have the Ori attack the Jaffa first and wipe them out.
Mm.
That would have been powerful. We would have felt that. It would have hurt badly. We would have been, oh boy, we would have been seething. We would have immediately been like, these guys are bad news. There would have been a lot that would have been set up. It probably would have felt a little bit too much like Super Anubis. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they didn't want to quite go that way with it per se. However, that's me sitting in a chair coming up with a different way to say, how could we have talked about the Jaffa differently and got us to a point where we are here now, where we've got a really powerful new bad guy. They're taking over the galaxy. They're really good at it. We have a slight edge. We have more information now than we ever did, and we might be able to use that to our advantage, but we want Christopher Judge in the room as Teal'c doing it with us. How can we do that? Well, have the bad guy be bad and have the first victim be the Jaffa. And maybe not all of them, but certainly enough to blow apart the council. Now you've got Jaffa, you got Teal'c and the Jaffa back in the kind of the role of rebel fighter, which works for a story. Again, I would be technically disappointed, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it would work. Christopher Judge could be right back in the SGC with no split allegiances, and man, give Christopher Judge a chance to soak in and act through the pain and disappointment and anger that comes with having achieved your lifelong goal only to have it ripped away from you arbitrarily. Man, talk about a great character opportunity there. Right, you could have all sorts of wonderful story in through that, but whatever. We're here now. This is where we are.
So let me comment briefly on that.
Sure.
I think that is a direction that they could go. In order for that to work, the Jaffa would have had to come together, in a much more solidified way than I think would have been practical. The Jaffa are a singular group of people, and at the same time, they are people who have been almost bred for for allegiance to different Gould masters.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree, that has bred within them active and outright hostility toward other Gould or toward other Jaffa. Mm-hmm. So there was a brotherhood that we are all Jaffa, but there was also like, you know, I'm Ra and you're, you know, you're Apophis, and so mm-hmm. I hate you. Or I'm Kronos and you're Apophis and I hate you.
Yeah.
And so like the Ori want to try to take over the galaxy, or, you know, they want to convert the people. A large group of people are the Jaffa, and they're a military organization, of some variety, you know, so being, you know, converting them is good to, for the Ori to think they need to try to wipe out the Jaffa, wholesale like that, like the governmental structures and such, the Jaffa would have had to actively try to actively be resistant to what they're selling,
yeah.
The Ori are selling. But that said, the Jaffa, we've already learned this from before, are people who are looking for enlightenment. What we mean by enlightenment is irrelevant at this point in time.
Right.
And, you know, the promise or the idea of the ancient ones, the ascended ones, has been part of that which has unified the Jaffa as a people, in whatever way the Jaffa as people in their disparate Gu'uld have been.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I after everything that happened with the Gu'uld, the Jaffa as people are, I mean, their society is under PTSD, and I don't see them coming together in a way that would be natural, in such a way that would then bring them to be actively opposed to such a degree that the Ori would want to try to wipe them out.
It
makes sense that the SGC would have that kind of pressure, and so wiping them out makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that the Ori would want to do that regardless. But that doesn't strike me as like what would have to happen for the Jaffa to be in a position where the Ori would want to wipe them out. I don't think that the Jaffa's people could have gotten there.
If what happened between season 8 and season 9 happened in the course of weeks.
Say more.
Well, season 8 ended.
Yeah.
Season 9 begins. And within the scope of the story, the amount of time that has passed between those two things is roughly the same amount of time as when season 8 ended and season 9 began. You know,
right,
a number
quick.
Of weeks. Right. You know, you and me, we're workshopping this thing right now, right? Live-ish. You know, y'all are listening to it. But, you know, we're all we're doing is that we spent probably 15 minutes talking about this. No, not even. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Give us a couple of hours. We could get through this. Maybe season 9 starts 2 years later. Maybe I'm on an interesting idea, but the details are a little wrong, so let's keep talking about how it could work, maybe. Okay, let's shift gear. You know what I'm saying? Like, and they're making a TV show. They don't have the luxury of bountiful time. They have to come up with a whole lot of episodes, really. You know what I mean? Like, the realities of making TV programming, I'm not calling them bad story writers. I'm just acknowledging that I can do quibbles with it because I have abundant time and I'm not under the gun to do this stuff.
Yeah,
and it doesn't negate the
quibble. Speaking to that, you know, they actually didn't make a mention, Damon Kindler did in the commentary, that at this point in time, they only had about like 2 weeks to write each story. I mean, they were just snapping them out.
Yep. I don't like it because I think that I don't like what they're doing with the Jaffa storyline. It feels like they painted themselves into a corner. And they are having a really hard time painting themselves out of that corner.
Okay.
And is, I think it's showing. And why I feel so frustrated is that Christopher Judge's Teal'c is such an amazing character. And he's just been, it's just really frustrating how little screen time he's getting and how little character development is happening. He's just an angry guy walking into the council every episode. Every episode, he's on the staircase going, Garrick, what are you doing? And Garrick's in the middle, turning around, looking at him angry, like, you're an idiot. Like, that's it. That's been the entire interaction this entire season. We're halfway through it. Anyway, okay, let me wrap this up.
All right.
I am really excited about this storyline again. I actually think this episode did a great job of setting a lot of things up. It's part of the reason why I was a little surprised when I saw Damien Kindler's name on there. However, as I'm thinking about it, it really was A to B to C to D, which is his thing.
That's his thing.
It's fine. It was like the things that I got on A, B, C, and D are helpful. They move the meta story forward. It works within the construct of this particular. Oh, yeah. And we're not even good. I am going to give the story benefit of the doubt that nobody who was writing had lived through a nationwide pandemic before. And so when they wrote things like the borders are shutting down and they thought that people would obey that they had no reason to think differently. Yeah. So I'm just going to give it to them.
No, we will, you know, without spoiling anything for the part two, we will see more of that. Some of the realities of that and the challenges of actually shutting down.
Yeah. Also, that the SDC turns into the nerve center for coordinating a viral outbreak. That was also a little weird, but whatever. But giving grace on that one and setting it aside and thinking about the episode as a whole, I like this one quite a lot. Yeah. It gave me a lot to chew on. So, Zach, what did you think about this episode?
So, I've actually shared quite a bit of what I think. I mean, generally, it's a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
The pandemic, the global pandemic thing that's happening 20 years later feels a little too close to home.
Yes.
You know, the COVID pandemic did not have the kind of virility that this pandemic seems to be having.
Yeah. Or fatality.
Or fatality. There you go. That's a better word. You know, this is a pandemic that is promising to leave hundreds of millions or more dead.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly even in the billions.
Yes.
Of people dead. You know, this is cultural devastation type of pandemic is the promise of this plague here. I don't think that ever once COVID threatened cultural devastation.
Oh, no, which was half the reason why people were so frustrated.
Yeah. You know, but even so, you know, to the original, the early fears anxiety of the pandemic. In the first couple of months in 2020, you know, just I felt it watching this episode, and I'm like, ugh,
yeah.
It, you know, but again, like I said, you know, having this pandemic on Earth at this time with everything else that has happened in this season with the Ori totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it does add a certain level of peril to our heroes and everything. And, you know, in 20 years ago, we didn't have, I mean, we had things like SARS.
Yeah.
And that, which were certainly localized pandemics or epidemics, at least.
Yep.
But, you know, it just felt different this time around. Not in a good or a bad way, just different.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I feel, you know, was kind of lazy, and to be fair, it's not the laziness specifically of this episode, when Orlan is talking about the Ori and the division that happened between the Ori and the Altarans, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, whenever it was,
mm-hmm.
right? They're like, there were two basic groups. One was religious fanatics, and one was, for lack of a better term, science geeks.
You're right.
And I'm like, oh, for
now, the words that he chose to use was, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, he said they were believers in science. They were worshippers of science.
Yeah, I you know, the issue at hand is that
those are somehow in opposition to each other.
Well, yeah, not just that, but also even in 2005, that's low hanging fruit.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that kind of.
Yeah, but they also chose to, instead of trying to come up with, I don't know, another ancient character, they were like, I know, we can only have the ancients who have ever been on Earth in the past be eligible ancients now.
Yeah.
Only them, no others. No, we cannot introduce a new ancient character. Nope, cannot. Can't do it.
I mean, you know, in this situation, introducing a new ancient, I mean, the fact that it was Orlan. Did help in because Orlan had a history with Sam.
That's undeniable.
You know, that makes it, you know, like if you were the ancients, and I imagine the ancients sitting up there having a council, like, so we need to send somebody down there. It's got to be a one-way trip, and it sucks for that person, but we need to send somebody down there, and we need to make it look like they're going rogue. Because we definitely need to get this information to
fair.
The humans,
that's
but
fair.
We don't want to make it look like we're interfering with them. Who are you going to choose?
But let me play just a real quick little one man play for you, just real fast. Right here, we
absolutely.
Go. Okay. All right, you almost have it. I know. Wait, who says that? What are you doing there, man? I've never seen you before. I know. I look different, but that's because I couldn't figure out a way to make myself look the way I looked like before. What? Who? What are you trying? I'm Orlan. You are Orlan? But you have a... But you're a woman! Like, right, like you could still come up with a story to explain why this person is the same character as before. Sure, Oma was the same looking person the entire time. That's fine. She was special. She was really good at it. Like, Orlan did it twice, and he screwed up the second time or something, you know? Like, you have outs.
All right, I will accept that. There could have been ways that you would have put an adult in that position and still have it Orlan.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
But to your point of that's weirdly lazy storytelling where they have a diametric explanation of the society of the ancients way back when.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of storytelling that's all like, you know, it's got to be Orlan, but it can't be the adult. So who do we pick? I guess we make him a kid. It's like, no, you can just make him look different. He's ascended, for crying out loud.
Fair. You know, one of the things that really also makes it frustrating to me is that when you look at the ancients, the whole idea of enlightenment and, you know, I mean, there is a strong mystical element to that.
Yes.
And so, you know, there is the Altarians have some sort of benevolent quality baked into them.
Yes.
The Ori seem to have some sort of malevolent quality baked into them.
Yeah.
That's the dichotomy. Or maybe benevolent and malevolent aren't the right words, but you've got, you know, just like the approach to power. We've talked about that earlier today, right? Power corrupts.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that the easiest, you know, power is a good thing. Okay. And the shortest route to get to power is the best way. That seems to be the Ori approach.
Mm-hmm.
The Altarians seem to be saying, no, the best way is through self-enlightenment, self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to, among other things, a lack of interference with others. That's the dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not religion and science.
Right.
And that's
right.
What bugs me.
Yeah.
Because they're using religion and science as the low-hanging fruit, to talk about a dichotomy that isn't actually about science and religion.
Right.
It's about power.
Yeah.
And different ways of approaching power. And you can have the manipulative and bastardization of power in both religious and non-religious circles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you know, all that said, I think overall it's a good episode. It's a strong episode. It starts to bring things together and create a lot of tension in this episode. And you know, what are we going to do with it? Where are we going to go with it?
Yeah.
How is this going to get revealed or, you know, solved? So, I guess that's really all I have to say.
I'm looking forward to it. And I know that technically this is the mid-season break, right?
Yeah.
And you and me, we're not going to be able to record again for probably another 3 weeks. So it will be a kind of a mid-season break for us, too.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for part two.
The actual break was a couple of months at least.
Yeah, sure.
That makes sense. I can look it up. I got it. Actually, I got that right here. The Fourth Horseman Part 1 aired September 16, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth Horseman Part 2 aired January 6th.
Oh yeah,
2006.
So all of fall. Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's a long ways to wait.
Yeah.
Okay. Well then, Brent.
Yeah.
It is that time in the show.
Yes.
When I ask you, how many chevrons does the Fourth Horseman Part 1 get?
I liked it. I thought that the bad parts weren't that good, but they didn't really drag down the whole thing. And because I liked the good part so much, I'm really, really excited about where we're going from here. So this isn't perfect and it's not mind bending. I'm feeling pretty positive. So it's probably going to be, it's going to be a 6 for me, 6 out of 7. I could probably imagine me being a bit more sour on it and go lower, but I'm not. I'm excited to see where we go with this. I think that the avenues of success that have been laid down right now are plausible and it works within the story. And therefore I am not sitting here rolling my eyes going like, wow, they jumped the shark, because they didn't. There's no shark jumping yet. So let's see. Garrick being an Ori though, too. Also the makeup for Garrick was great.
I love the fact that his gold emblem tattoo has kind of melted down his face.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. All the yeses. So I'm excited to going from here. 6 out of 7 for me. How about you? How many chevrons do you give it?
You know, I think like you, it's a good episode. It's not a perfect episode. There are problems. There are things that still make me cringe, and you know that brings it down from a perfect episode. I'm gonna follow suit with you and give it 6 out of 7.
There you go. Okay.
Yep. All right. So it's been several weeks since we have podcasted. And so let me see. I didn't notice any comments on Facebook this week. So I think that our Facebook group is silent this week.
Oh, I hope that Facebook dies. It'd be great. Hey, everybody, go over to Discord. It's really cool over there. Go over to Discord. That's where I'm at. That's why it's cool. Okay.
Because, right.
Do you want me to go over to the Discord? See what
Why
we got?
Don't you go over to the Discords?
All right, we got Kriamisk. Hi, Kriamisk.
Hi, Kriamisk.
Kriamisk says, this felt a little like watching the news 4 years ago.
Oh,
he's
yes.
got a little emoji with a mask on it. Brent a 5 and Zach a 5. Very close.
Oh, very close. Yeah.
Very close, Kriamisk. Well done. All right, then we've got Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin says, hi, Brent. Hi, Zach. Welcome back. These two episodes have always been some of my favorites in season 9. Since I've been looking forward to this episode, I decided to take a few notes while watching. 1, is this the first episode where we learn Dr. Lam is the general's daughter? I can't remember if this is the first mention, but I think it is.
No, it's not.
It was, there was a cafeteria scene. What? A few episodes ago?
Yeah. There was a scene between General Landry and Dr. Lam in the cafeteria where it was revealed.
Yeah.
That was a few episodes ago.
Yep.
But it, since they were clearly keeping it on the DL, it would actually make sense that a lot of the people, especially potentially a lower lieutenant, might not have actually gotten that memo.
Sure.
So the fact that he didn't know that Lam was Landry's daughter, that's plausible.
That tracks.
Doesn't change the cringiness of what he says or the inappropriateness therein.
No, sure doesn't. Right, 2. General Hammond!
Hooray!
3. gee, this whole situation seems familiar somehow. Can't quite put my finger on it. Number four. Carter seemed to be able to sense Orlin before he revealed himself. I wonder if it's related to their earlier glowing intimacy thing. Yeah, might be.
Could be.
Number five. They always make the Jell-O look so good. They do. They really do. I agree.
I want to point out here, like, Orlin gets a PB&J sandwich.
Yeah.
On white bread.
Yes.
For lunch, Carter picks Jell-O. Not Jell-O on the side of something or with something, but just the Jell-O.
There was nothing else on the tray?
I don't think so.
Maybe she already had her soup.
She doesn't eat anything else during that scene.
No. No. Yeah.
Anyway.
Continue. Number six. I wonder if the Aura, I have a closet full of those staffs somewhere, or if one is made each time they make a new prior. I'm going to go with the closet. Ooh. I'm going to go with the, okay, and here is your, I mean, they're all a little different, but, you know.
So here's what I want to know. It's like, where is this closet? Because Garrick's body is in the Milky Way.
I know.
And then his mind goes to Celestis.
Zach.
He gets turned into an Ori.
Zach.
And he comes back and now he has a staff.
You're looking at it a little too closely. Hey, maybe he got, what's his face? Maybe he got the other prior's staff. Maybe it's a gift.
Yeah, but what about, he needs his own staff.
Oh, no, I know. He's going to go back and get a new staff and then come back.
Once the priors go to the Milky Way galaxy, they can't go back because the Milky Way galaxy does not have within itself the power. They don't have the equivalent of ZPMs just running around the place. And that's the kind of power you need to go to multiple galaxies. You know?
But they just immolate. And then
I'm pretty sure that when they immolate, they did.
I don't know. There wasn't any ash. I saw no evidence that there was actually a body.
Well, you know, I'm just saying that I'm pretty sure they're dead.
Okay. Number seven.
I think the lack of ash has more to do with
the heat effects. And intensity of the fire.
I think it has more to do with special effects than with the internal story consistency.
Zach, I refuse to believe that we are watching a television show.
Well, I can't argue with that.
If there's inconsistencies, there must be a reason. Okay. Number seven. I can't tell if he's acting like this on purpose or just a really bad actor. I don't know who he is right now. Actually, now that I think about it, he's giving me Kristen Stewart, I guess. Kristen Stewart in Twilight Vibes. Yeah, probably Orlin. Number eight. Will somebody please get that prior a cigarette?
Oh, that's because that prior. Well, no, it wasn't that prior. It was the other prior that played the cigarette.
Gotcha. Number nine. I wonder how long it takes for the priors to master their mind powers. It seems pretty fast. Number 10.
It does.
Is personalizing hazmat suits with your name really the best use of taxpayer money? Yeah. Well, I guess it kind of depends. If your job is to go into hazmat situations all the time and those hazardous situations could lend to your body melting, you probably want a name on the suit. Number 11.
Well, not just that, but you also want to make sure that the one that you're wearing actually fits you.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, this is mine. There are many like it, but this one is mine. Number 11. So based on what Garrick said, it seems the fire actually is death. I don't remember the line. Oh, well.
I don't remember.
Kevin concludes, this episode is huge for multiple reasons, and the only thing I'm having trouble deciding is whether or not chevrons will be deducted due to obvious parallels that I've decided to avoid mentioning for this episode. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of collateral damage, so I'll just move on. I'm going to take a guess and just say a 7 from both of you.
Ooh.
That's pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close.
Yep. Now, that is all we've got on the Discord. It's quiet there as well. Do we have any emails?
We have an email from David.
Oh, hi, David.
David gives us an encoding of flashback to 2020 bias buffer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, am I the only one to have made a COVID-19 comment? No?
Nope.
I didn't think so. Nope. All right. COVID flashbacks aside.
Yeah.
This is a very good episode and is starting to tie some story threads together.
Mm-hmm.
The Jaffa tension because of Garrick is now seriously linked to the Ori storyline. The Sodan were not just a one-off thing.
Yep.
The Ori are not just a threat out there, but are now actively threatening Earth.
Mm-hmm.
We even get a callback to Creepy Orlin, which is somehow now even more weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might have worked better if they got the original actor back, but schedules are a thing.
Yes.
But hey, we got Hammond back briefly.
Yeah.
All that and a little more Ori background, or is that in part two? Anyhow, great episode and a terrific cliffhanger ending for the mid-season break.
Yeah.
Brent, 6 chevrons for yes. Jaffa plot advancement.
Yeah.
Might have been 7 if it wasn't for creepy little Orlin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yep, yep, yep. And Zach.
Yeah.
7 chevrons for Garrick Pryor and the Ori.
So close.
He says,
very close.
See you in 2 weeks. Hopefully, no, it's going to be more than 2 weeks because 2 weeks I think it's
3.
Yeah. It'll be 3 weeks probably.
Yep.
For part 2. Shameless self-promotion. This week's promo is my 150th.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And Donis Davis is 150th.
Ooh.
Hey, look at that.
Is that a coincidence?
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. This episode that we just watched was his 150th. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. 150. Well done.
Well done. Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you very much. I'm excited to watch it now.
Yeah. I have it on my computer ready to go.
Yeah.
But before we get to the promo,
yeah,
I need to ask you, how is the Fourth Horseman part 2 going to go?
The Fourth Horseman part 2. The Fourth Horseman part 2. I really can't think of another pun other than what I've already done.
I think we're
stuck. So then let's just have some fun with what I think might actually happen.
Okay.
All right. So instead of being silly, let's dive into something that might actually be a prediction here. Okay, ready?
All right.
Next time on Stargate SG-1, the SG-1 team are in a pickle. You see, Garrick has taken on the powers of an aura, of a Pryor, and he is back into the chamber with a melty gold face and being all like, it's time. It is time to get in line. And everyone's going to go, sweet, we are in line. And Braytek and Teal'c are going to be like, we're not. And they're going to escape in a dramatic fashion, in a way that makes Brent go, finally, we have some Teal'c storyline and some Jaffa storyline that is actually adventuresome and interesting and worth our time. Not just him walking around in a robe scowling. Nope, it's high adventure where we get Teal'c with a staff weapon shooting back and dodging energy things and somehow getting out of the way and being awesome and flipping and running and adventure. So good. And he makes his way over to a gate and he dials it and he doesn't have his IDC. Oh no.
They
can't go through. But somehow, some way, the Garrick Pryor is coming around the corner and he forces the iris open.
Whoa.
Now, Teal'c and Braytek don't know this, but they just decide to go for it just in case. And they make it through. But close behind is Garrick. See, part 2 is an episode in a bottle. The whole world is shutting down, and so the SGC is also in quarantine. Nobody in or out at all. You're not even allowed to go to a different gate or a different place. Alpha site? No way. So the whole thing takes place in the SGC, and Dr. Bill and Carter and friends are all using their weapons, their new weapons, and they do get the edge, but it doesn't seem to be enough. And what's this? What's happening? It's Orlin. He's coming around the corner. No, you're just a kid, Orlin. No, don't do it. Don't sacrifice yourself. But he does. He grabs a hold of Garrick and he's like, not today. And he uses some of the last little bits of ancient knowledge that's inside his mind to, I don't know, do something. We'll learn about it later. Maybe we won't. Maybe this is the tension that we'll find out. And he saves the day, but dies doing it. Oh, Orlin. Is this how it's going to go? Or was it all a dream?
Oh.
Join us next time on Stargate SG-1 for the exciting conclusion. The Horseman. Fourth Horseman. That guy. Part 2.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty exciting, eh?
Well, that would certainly be interesting if that happened.
I want it to happen. I want Jaffa Adventure. Do I get Jaffa Adventure?
You get the episode.
Great.
I mean, so, you know, to be fair, I remember the broad strokes of this episode. I don't remember all of the particulars of this episode, so I don't remember how much Jaffa adventuring there may or may not be.
I mean, imagine an episode that they use some tricks to make it look like there was no cuts, but imagine just like following Teal'c the whole with everything that like it actually result. Like, wouldn't that be cool?
Like the a day in the life of Teal'c,
sort of, but like,
or this, like 45 this, minutes of Teal'c.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this like highly adventurous 45 minutes, like it's going down 45 minutes.
Ah, well, there's really only one thing that we can do at this point in time.
Yeah.
And that's to watch the promo.
Okie dokie.
All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. I am hitting play now.
Hallowed are the Ori.
Yeah. They're hallowed.
Next time on Stargate SG-1.
Anyone who came in contact with them. And yeah, anyone who came in contact with those people. You know, at the rate this thing is traveling, in 3 days it'll hit the Middle East. 6 days it'll be in China.
The search for the cure to the Ori plague yields little hope.
Oh, no!
And tensions mount within the Jaffa.
The Gold are imposters, but the Ori are the real gods.
You doubt the power of the Ori.
Oh, he needs
it's not their power that you doubt.
It's Tony Todd!
Still
oh, yes!
Gods.
Before it, we were out there looking for a way to stop them, to stop this from happening, and to start pointing fingers at such a crucial...
General Landry!
Is there any hope against the power of the Ori?
Oh, wow.
It's all next time. On Stargate SG-1.
Oh, no.
Retreat is no longer an option. I do not want to slaughter you. But I will if you give me no choice.
Oh, dear. That's... Wow.
Hallowed are the Ori.
Oh, no. Okay.
Hallowed are the Ori.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
You know, there could be some Jaffa intrigue going on there.
I want battles. I don't want intrigue anymore. Don't give me intrigue. Boring.
Well, okay. Well, thank you very much for listening to our podcast, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
If you have any questions or comments or thoughts about this episode or any of the other episodes, you can email us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, go to the Facebooks and go to the Facebook page and the Facebook group and do all the things there.
Yep.
You can go to the Discords and do all sorts of fun things at the Discords.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to support the podcast, you can go to Buy Me a Coffee, yep. Which is at their website, which is WTTS.space.
Space.
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 And with all of that, I say I'm Zach.
And I'm Brent.
This has been Walking Through the Stargate. See you next time.
Bye.
Carter, dial it up. Get these people home.